on RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
It was the right horse as well for that 100 to be bought up. And to hear the crowd, it was great. You know, it came through on the radio and you thought, wow, it's almost like we're back. You know, a great occasion before the Spring Carnival.
I think it's great that there is more prize money. I think it is great that there is innovation. Racing needs that. But we need to look at it from a consumer point of view, a racing fan point of view. We want the best competing against the best.
Would Newmarket or Shaunti put on a gargantuan racing festival in the second week of June because the weather's good and they could, like Valandis is doing, and disrupt Royal Ascot?
We are a small racing jurisdiction. We are isolated. I would have thought a work together model would be smarter than a disruptive model that seeks to fracture the states and their ability to work together.
Every sport relies on its grand final festivals to be the best shop window for overall attraction to it. That's as simple as it is to me.
It is that time of the week, The Verdict, where we discuss and dissect all things racing from the weekend and the past week. And oh boy, have we got plenty to talk about on and off the track. Matty Stewart has got a week off.
Where is he?
He's going fishing, could you believe
it? I didn't get an invite.
Now, Mick Sharkey, welcome to you. And it is great to have Racing.com's Paul Tatnall in the saddle for The Verdict. How are you, Paul?
Good, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Now, I can't see Matt Stewart as a fisherman. Now, you're the professional fisherman amongst us. Has he got the patience?
Now, listen, I took Matt out on my boat one day.
Your boat? The Leviathan.
Well, it's a little boat. It's a little boat. But I was a little... He said, pick me up. Mordialla Creek, pick me up. We'll go out. And I said, righto, we'll get some pinkies. We'll shoot back in. I'll clean them up for you and everything will be good. I think this is pre-Maddie's swimming regime. He might have been a little bit more rotund than he is presently.
Hang on, was one end out of the water?
I was concerned for buoyancy. I was seriously concerned for buoyancy. But he can't. He's useful enough.
Well, that's a nice little clip while he's not here. Matty Stewart enjoying his time. Hey, gents. Good weekend of racing. We'll talk about the racing before we get into all of the issues. We had the doubleheader back at the Valley and then the Grand National Day yesterday, Paul. It was brilliant. I've been absolutely enthralled and blown away by the jumps racing season so far and the performances that we're seeing.
Yeah, big day, obviously, yesterday. And Will John, obviously, that was a terrific story. So big day yesterday as well. And obviously, I'm thunderstruck. On Saturday, I think that was probably the run of the day for me. I actually didn't back it. Backed the Lindsay Smith Tavaloo. But for me, obviously a big spring campaign there.
It was good too, Tuvalu the runner-up. And we'll talk to Terry Henderson from OTI about On Thunderstruck. He'll join us about half an hour. But Sharky, big breaking news this morning, unfortunately. True Self, who we've seen win the last two Queen Elizabeths, was guaranteed to come out here from overseas. One of the few internationals who was guaranteed has suspected suspensory issue. We'll find out from Terry and won't be coming out here. So, look, probably not the headline act that we've seen in recent years, but it was a guaranteed international run, and that's now not coming.
Well, yes, it was one that was coming. I actually was speaking to one of her owners this morning, a friend of mine who was on the golf course at Port Douglas. So I don't think he'd had the news at that point because he was rather chipper for 7:30. But yeah, look, disappointing that we don't have a quality horse coming out, but I wouldn't say a headline act.
All right.
Okay, if we're hanging our hat on a Queen Elizabeth, a back-to-back Queen Elizabeth winner, is this a sign of things to come, Paul? Is this a sort of... Are we worried that we're not getting a Group 2 horse here?
I think they're desperately worried on these, Frank. I think the number... This horse was definitely set. I think RV and the clubs are excited about its arrival. And I think, obviously, we'll talk about it in a second, Michael. There is an announcement tomorrow regarding the nominations for the Melbourne Cup, the Cox Plate and the Caulfield Cup. And make no mistake, you know, this horse was one of the headline acts, I led to believe.
Well, 9 year old. Was she nine?
She's nine.
She's pretty old.
Well, I don't know whether she would have been considered, you know, one of the spring majors, but
no league
it would have been, because I don't know how many others you'll actually have in a Cox Plate from overseas.
Wow,
and
exactly.
And Terry will tell us that they are nominating a number of overseas horses. Not sure how many of them will actually come out.
Well, OTI is sort of holding up the end, isn't it, really? Because they're Australian-based. They race horses all around the world. Terry will be identifying an opportunity here with potentially a thinner group of European horses to come out and beat. So Terry's probably... we can ask him when we speak to him, but I would suggest he's looking at this as a big opportunity.
Well, he's previously said 3 to 4 from OTI, then expecting potentially up to 9 or 10 internationals overall. So that's well down on previous years.
It is.
It is, but is that a bad thing this year, Sharky? With what's occurred in recent years?
I think it's a bad thing. You've turned the race. Well, sorry, not you. But Victorian racing, or Australian racing to an extent, has turned the Melbourne Cup and the Cup Carnival into an international event. So we rely on international participants to have international reach and relevance. If those numbers start to decline and erode to the point where they're insignificant, well, what does that say about the race, where it stands?
How many do you need to have at a Melbourne Cup to satisfy your international quota?
I like as many as there can be.
Because 12 out of 24 is too many, isn't it?
Aspirational, isn't it? Why do we start? Why do we? If it was golf or something like that, and you've got a heap of Australian golfers that are really, really good, and they go to a European contest, so they say, well, you're not allowed to have that many. You can't put numbers on it. You have to aspire to be better and to have more horses yourself and produce more horses as the home jurisdiction, as the home of the Melbourne Cup, I'd have thought.
What do you think, Paul? Do you think that what has been put in place with what occurred last year and previous years with the fatalities was required? Or there seems to be, when it all was announced, everyone was on the same table, on the same side, saying this is what needs to be done to protect our greatest race, to protect the reputation of racing as a whole. But as it has transpired, and as we've got closer to these nominations and the Spring Carnival, that there's been a bit of a shift in people's thoughts that, no, this is too onerous. What are we doing? What do you think?
I think they had no choice. Make no doubt, the pressure put on Racing Victoria and even the VRC from several areas was they had no choice but to come in hard and protect the integrity of the race in their view. I think they were worried about if they had a death in this year's Melbourne Cup, what it would mean not only for the spectre of the race, but actually its future. So I believe on that level, they had no choice. Now, you come back to the other clubs. So you got the Melbourne Racing Club with the Caulfield Cup. You got the Valley with the Cox Plate. They sent, you know, in their feedback to Racing Victoria, they were like, we get it. The race needs to be safe, but you got to protect our main events too. Now, I think that's where some of the frustrations are starting to come out now, where they're saying, well, you know, Michael Brown potentially has no international runners in the Valley. I think you'll find there's very, very, very few at all nominated for the Caulfield Cup. So I think they had no choice. I think there was pressure only from the commercial partners of the clubs, but also some government levels as well, is that you can't have another death in this year's Melbourne Cup.
Oh, I've got no doubt that the MRC and Moonee Valley Racing Club almost feel like collateral damage, unintended consequences, where they've had no issues in their major races, yet they also will now have to go through the same parameters. It'll be interesting. We've got the forum, like we did with the trainers last week. We've got the CEOs in studio this Wednesday. So Josh Blanksby from Caulfield, Michael Brow from Moonee Valley, and Steve Rosich from the VRC. So it'll be interesting to debate and discuss that amongst the three CEOs and what their various opinions are.
Potentially the big winner here is Lloyd Williams and Rob Hickmont. Their horses are coming, or some of them, and they are very good horses, Dawn Patrol in particular. And OTI, you know, they'd probably fit into that same boat. So they could be the big winners out of the lack of internationals, because they're still bringing quality horses.
And there still could be some late nominations, I think. There's a belief, though, when people see the nominations tomorrow and see potentially the fields aren't as strong, years go by, some overseas trainers and connections will see the prize money on offer and think, it actually is worth a crack. So it's definitely belief amongst those out there that could happen, but there just are a few nerves around tomorrow what that reaction is going to be to those fields.
All right, well, that announcement will be tomorrow afternoon. We'll talk more with Terry about that. Just before we get on to some of the other issues, the performance yesterday of Will John in the Grand National Hurdle, and also Social Element, who has come from nowhere in the Crisp, Sharky.
Social Element, what do you have, nearly 2 years off the scene, and he's come back as a jumper and just gone whammo, you know, fantastic effort. But Will John, I loved listening to Col McKenna on the drive-in and just hearing his passion, not only for, you know, jumps racing, but how deep that runs, you know, with his grandson, Will. He's indoctrinating him into the game. He's got his mates going to horse sales. He's naming horses after them. He's explaining to them where that Grand National Hurdle sits in jumps racing compared to the flat racing. So there's this whole education piece that's going on the back there with obviously young people that are close to him, but it's filtering out. Mm-hmm. Listening to Cole, it's filtering into that local community at Warrnambool. So you're breeding that next generation, Paul, of rusted on, diehard jumps fans that understand how hard it is to get a horse to that sort of standard with, Now, jumps racing's not a sport for the faint-hearted. You know, these horses have to be super fit. They're jumping. There's competition all around them. Oh, I loved listening to Cole. I thought that was as good as watching the race yesterday.
And they're a passionate bunch too. I must admit, I'm not a massive race jump connoisseur, but since my time at racing.com, they're probably the more passionate bunch of racing folk. I don't know whether there's history behind the events, but you know, I obviously watched a few of those races yesterday, and I think Social Element was an incredible win. And I think with the safety improvements too, they're starting to get that new fan back again. And credit to the associations here in Victoria that didn't follow some of those other states and jumped at shadows, have stuck with it, and you know, they got the credits yesterday.
You look at the Olympic coverage and Andrew Hoy, and there were some beautiful images of he and his horse competing, you know, over
amazing
the last few
images.
Days. But you have a look in the Herald Sun today at the picture of Will John leaping that fence, and the length and stretch and the athleticism of that horse. You know, there are inevitable comparisons that can be made, you know, across the equestrian discipline and the jumps racing.
Yep, there is no doubt about that. Brilliant stuff. If Will John goes to the Grand National Steeple, would you be on Will John or Social Element?
I don't think he'll go there. I think Cole wants to protect that handicap by the sounds of it this morning.
Yeah. And what about just the Irish Mafia that now just runs jumps racing here in Melbourne?
Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? They're like, you know, they're not displaced, but they've all migrated over here. They've found their niche. And look, even the story about John Allen coming over to ride jumps races, and now he's taken out the Victorian flat title.
You know, no doubt.
There's some great stories.
No doubt about that. Just a quick one yesterday. First Metro win for Team Hayes, JD and Ben. And a nice horse too, Sharky, that could be going places.
Yeah, Mr. Brightside, a recruit from New Zealand that came over here as a one-start maiden, I think, and got the maiden out of the way pretty quickly and has gone through the grades well. And, you know, for all the rumour and criticism and everything else, you look at their first month of training, I think they had 11 winners. And then a Metro winner again. They're going along okay, those boys. They're going along okay.
Premierships decided over in South Australia. Jamie Carr was a cakewalk in the end. Congratulations. Been a lot spoken about her. Kieran Maher, Dave Uses. Another record for Chris Waller. We're going to have a chat to Chris tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to it. A bit of a more in-depth chat. $40-plus million in prize money. The most wins ever from his stable. It's just insane what he's doing. Also, 5 premierships now for J-Mac, and he's only 29 years of age. We talk a lot about who's the best, and it's an intangible, really. It's subjective. But who do you reckon is the best jockey in Australia, Sharky?
Right here, right now? It's hard to split Jamie Carr and James McDonald. I enjoyed seeing Caitlin Mallion post how they celebrated that premiership.
I missed that. What did they do?
It looked like Caitlin had made him a lolly cake. You know, it's this big homemade cake covered in chocolate bars. And you think, well, yeah, I guess if you're a jockey and you win a premiership and you're wasting all year, you probably do want to indulge a sweet tooth a little bit. But no, it's two great riders at the peak of their powers at the moment.
And they could be fighting out some of the spring majors. Or will they, Paul? Because I've got a serious doubt whether we're going to see any Sydney jockeys in our spring carnival with what's happening in Sydney, because I can't see how the government here and the racing authorities will tighten a 14-day quarantine period.
Yeah, I can't see it happening at this stage. There's a story in The Australian last week saying around September 17, at the earliest, getting out of a lockdown. Now, looking at some of the rules that Racing Victoria put in place to essentially not letting people on tracks from red zones, we're at no chance for at least mid-September. I think what they're going to need are some kind of travel bubbles. And, you know, last year we had different rooms and chartered flights. That's at a long shot. I think that the state of New South Wales is in that much strife with its handling of COVID that unfortunately we're not going to see the J-Macs and the Hugh Bowmans down here in spring unless, you know, potentially at least by mid-October.
They'd need to make a decision to say, you know what, I'm going to base myself in Melbourne rather than try and dip in and out of both.
Could Peter Volandis be sitting there rubbing his hands together at this thought, thinking, you know, we've got these races now, we'll lobby to keep some of these horses, they won't have to go to Melbourne, the jockeys won't have to go to Melbourne,
yeah, but
we can have our own little spring carnival.
But they might be running these races at Kembla Grange.
True. That would be a slight spanner in the works, but he'd find some way to market it as a positive, I'm sure.
I think the other issue as well, some of the smaller stables trying to get those horses back again between New South Wales and Victoria, they struggled last year when we were obviously doing it hard. Now, obviously, the tables have turned a little bit again. So I think it's starting to dawn on a few people around racing that they're going to have to start planning for another COVID-impacted 2021. We all thought last year, hey, the vaccinations would be here, life would be back to normal. It just hasn't happened. So that planning has started.
Unless they get an exemption or a miracle occurs in New South Wales, which we're not seeing that likely, I can't see how they'll be allowed to come and compete here.
I don't think they're going to have crowds like the Everest.
Oh, they won't have crowds. Surely not.
Well, Peter was very bullish with his handling around the NRL and getting people back early. I think they'll absolutely have a crack at it, but you'd be stunned if their big race day in middle of October
so
have crowds.
So this debate about who does J-Mac ride, Zaki very elegant, it could end up becoming a moot point. It might only be in a couple of Sydney races because they may not, because he's going to ride Nature Strip in the Everest on Caulfield Cup Day. He's not going to get here for a Cox Plate 7 days later, you would think.
No, would not if they have bubbles and you're required to isolate or anything like that. So, which is, you know, we can only work on what was happening last year. So.
A few SMSs are flying through here. Why would they leave Sydney with all that money? Good to have some Sydney listeners here too. Hey, personally, I'd be happy if no internationals turn up for the Spring Carnival. Good. Can't bet with any confidence in races they're in. Form is impossible to line up.
No, it's not.
Add the travel issues.
Do the work.
Races will still be run, locals will win, and we can all line up the form. It's a win-win. That's from Mark.
Great work, Mark. Yeah.
The problem,
there is racing in other places other than Australia, you know.
The problem with the internationals is that the fix Racing Victoria have put in is not directly addressing the cause of the issue, which is lack of adaptation to the Australian racing environment. Werribee needs to be converted to a night racing venue. Quarantine should be moved to Macedon. So there's another one there.
I still find it puzzling that, you know, all these checks and balances around international horses coming for the spring are so stringent, yet you can bring a horse out in May and there's no issue. And it may have any number of problems or develop any number of problems, but no one seems to mind.
Bring them all over, Shark. Just bring them over here. We don't care. We'll take on the internationals and beat them. Money will get them here. It's ridiculous to have so many when a lot are seemingly inferior. We should cap it to six. Could I please ask Sharky, does he think we'll ever see a super race stallion like Lonro, or so you think again? It seems our champion stallions are so protected they want to finish with a clean race record. That's from Chad.
Yeah, it depends on the type of horse. I think speed horses tend to come off the track a little earlier. You know, if you've got a two-year-old or a three-year-old with a good Group 1 record over the short course, well, the commercial sense is for them to retire early. But horses like Lonro and Say Think, they weren't winning Group 1s over 1,200. They were extending. I think, you know, the more middle-distance Guineas-style horse that we see remain intact, I think the better chance you have of a long racetrack career for them.
All right. I've got an SMS here. Now, this is someone who knows what's going on with the COVID situation, and I just happened to live with her as well.
Birthday on the weekend?
It was, yeah.
How'd you celebrate?
Went out to dinner last night.
Where to?
Just local.
But too much away,
Jackie got it. She actually got a personal message from Andrew Hoy at the Olympics. So
I saw that.
My cookbook was very, very low down the order. But as we know, Jackie is keeping everyone up to date with the COVID situation. And she's just texted me and said, there is no way New South Wales will be clear by mid-September. There is no way jockeys will be able to get here. It is a super red zone. No permits even for sport. There will be no exemptions. It's different to last year. You can't get bubbles from Sydney. There's no way the government will allow it when Vic residents aren't even allowed home right now. So
I can sort of almost hear her voice just telling us off, you know, waving the finger and saying, boys,
I've heard that voice plenty of times. I'll give you the tip.
She's the authority.
Hey, a lot of SMSs and discussion too on the premierships that we just quickly did a whip around. Now, South Australia, it was brilliant theatre. It was fascinating to watch with Jess and Todd going head for head. Todd wins the Lightning on Beau Rosser, Todd Pannell, and he draws level with Jess. I think it was 63 wins, was it a piece? So, just like we've seen in the high jump last night at the Olympics, they handed out two gold medals, I thought, maybe this is a dual premiership win, it's great. No, it's a countback.
I don't understand that.
For the most seconds. Yeah, so, who runs second the most ends up being the most successful jockey and the premiership winner in South Australia. What do we think, boys?
I think it's ridiculous. And yet, doesn't it put it into perspective last night in the greatest show in sport, the Olympics, when two rivals are head-to-head and can't be separated and they turn around, shake hands and say, well, why don't we both win?
You can't back on anything. You should go back on strike rate
or stakes win.
Well, how far back would you go if they were level on second, level on third? What do you do?
It's just ridiculous. And Jess obviously had a bit of time off. Injured as well. I'm with you. Like they judge it on the wins. They don't judge it on the seconds or the thirds. And, you know, she, in my view, obviously, I you know, I work with her terrific partner, James Seferis, but I'm of the view that they should definitely split the honours. It's about the wins. It's not about the seconds or thirds. And it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit, not embarrassing, it's not the right word, but Jesus.
I think it's something that, I think it's something that they need to look at. And obviously this year, it may be difficult, although you could do a retrospective. I'd like the same thing to happen for Brett Prebble with his 99 and a half wins.
Yep.
Nowadays, the half is counted a win. I think we should go back and say, hey, congratulations, Brett. You did 100 in a season.
Absolutely.
I think that makes sense. We're going to take a quick break, boys. There's plenty of SMSs to get through. Terry Henderson will join us soon. Want to discuss the fallout from the trainers forum last week as well. And there's a few grabs from that that I want to discuss and get your thoughts. I wrote a comment piece yesterday about why is this such a disconnect at the moment between the trainers and between those that run racing. We'll talk about that on the other side of this on The Verdict.
SN's Racing Pulse. This is The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Paul Tatnall is filling in for Matty Stewart. No, he's going. Matty might be fishing for a couple of weeks.
Something
too.
About, isn't he?
And Mick Sharkey, who is here as well. A few SMSs here. What are we going to go to? Here, Magpie Jack from Ballarat. The Adelaide Premiership result is a disgrace. When there's a dead heat in a race, do we give it to the horse who's run second the most times? From Magpie Jack. How much did you have on Twilight Payment, Sharky? If it's that easy, that's from Mark.
Plenty, Mark. It was very good at 26-1, actually. Thanks very much. Some doubles, too.
Can you tell me what the good internationals do for our racing, Sharky? That's from Hariba.
What they do for our racing? Probably make sure that our racing isn't provincialised and thought of as a backwater of the rest of the world. And possibly Australian racing fans tend to overthink where our horses sit in the field of great horses around the world. And I think that's probably been highlighted by a couple of polls I've seen run by racing.com this week, Paul, about the Horse Olympics, where there were some strange results there.
Yeah, there was a few strange results.
Well, look, you've got to have a crack at things, and we did have a week free of racing, so we need to find things to talk about. What a fantastic opportunity for our local Victorian jockeys to have a crack at the big races. Keep the Sydney jockeys out. That's from Scott. There's a few other SMSs that are coming through as well. Hey, one of the big talking points of the week was the trainers panel we had on Thursday, and it was eye-opening. It was enthralling to listen to and get the thoughts from those who know the sport so well at the coalface. Mick Price, Dave Eustace and Cindy Alderson, who have got such great depth of knowledge, and they're also intelligent to be able to put together coherent arguments about what is going on in their sport. I'm going to run through a few of the big issues that they spoke about. Keen to get your thoughts and the listeners' thoughts as well. Mick Price, first of all, on the week off and whether it should be changed if they want to do something like this again.
Sunday's a good idea for everybody, for family, for friends, for the whole community has a difference. I'm better on a Sunday. So I think Sunday would be good, but it would be nice if someone from RV was here to say, well, Sunday's not on or it is on because of the cost of turnover. I mean, you know what? If you did have a few Sundays off and it did cost you turnover, is it the end of the world?
So, Sundays or a week off, Sharky?
I can see Mr. Price's thinking there with Sundays. I think that makes great sense. It gives people a chance, as he said, to catch up with friends, with family, with, you know, people from industry and work life outside of racing. You know, you have a Monday off, what do? Twiddle around, you know, catch up with your mates. Oh, sorry, they're all at work doing their normal jobs. You know, I think Sundays make sense. You know, one Sunday a month maybe might be a nice way to do it. So there's some regularity there for participants to catch their breath, go and have, you know, relationships and normal life with people that are also having that on the weekends. I think it makes perfect sense. The week off, I think there's been enough pushback from trainers across the board in the last 2 weeks to say, look, an experiment, yes, probably not a great one. Jockeys benefited from it. Did anyone else? Probably not. And look, Racing Victoria has to accept that feedback and pull it apart and actually say, well, did we get this right? I think rather than defending it all the time, and why not just consider that feedback? But what also wasn't it considered beforehand?
Also a victim of timing a little bit. I think if it wasn't for the fact that most of Victoria was locked down, you know, you couldn't travel. I think half of Racing Victoria and all the people I spoke to were booked in at Noosa last week, and obviously they couldn't go. So there's a general feeling that, okay, potentially not a great idea, but it was an idea that many supported. They had the out. The Trainers Association went to them the day before the board meeting and said, listen, we can't do anything. We're locked up. It'd be good for turnover to keep going. But you know, the board decided to go the other way. I think the other thing to add as well, Sunday, that's quite a strong wagering turnover day. I can't see RV coming at that at any time soon.
Are they going to actually... Is there any want? I know we've just had a week off racing and there's this constant conversation around welfare and participant welfare and everything else, but we've just jammed a race meeting onto Good Friday.
100%.
You know, is this genuine? Is there a genuine want to address this issue of stretch of time on participants, or are we just saying it because we think we should and we keep like cramming race meetings all over the place? And like Good Friday, that used to be sacrosanct as a day of...
You do play other sports on Good Friday now, and they race in other states on Good Friday now.
Whether you agree with that, don't agree with that, so I think it's a personal...
Well, you were almost a minister. so I keep forgetting that. You taught RA, didn't you?
Peace be with you, Michael. I think Good Friday topic's a bit more of a personal topic, depending on who you are and what side of the fence you live on. But I just think there's a bit of window dressing here, and there's not a lot of substance.
And to the point about, I was surprised by the amount of kickback and commentary on this week off, because after all, Racing Victoria did announce it almost 18 months ago. It's been in the calendar. And that's why, if you haven't had a read, jump on RSN, have a read of the comment piece I put there about communication, because it doesn't seem to me that it was communicated that well, because trainers are busy. They live in the moment 24/7. So it's all very well to have an email, have a survey, but you need face-to-face discussions. And I reckon if a lot of the Racing Victoria hierarchy or other people in the industry go to training, have a bit of a chat to the trainers of a morning, say, hey, we're thinking about having a week off last week of July. What do you reckon about that? And you would get the direct feedback. No, don't. Or if you're going to do it, we must have trials and jump outs. You can't just wipe everything off. And I think that's what's missing. There is, to me, a disconnect at the moment, a really big disconnect. And have a listen to what Cindy Alderson had to say about Racing Victoria or the administrators. And it's not just Racing Victoria, even individual clubs as well, and the trainers, the participants.
I think we are given token lip service after the event. Racing Victoria, I think they treat us pretty much like, you know, the street sweepers, really. We're just given the information afterwards. I mean, even when you look at the Australian Trainers Association, when they tried to have this week off rescinded because of COVID, nothing happened, nothing changed. I think if Racing Victoria is serious about this industry, they need to really consider how the trainers are being impacted at the moment and be fair dinkum about it, not just give us these token little 4 days off and whatever. Actually, you know, get mentoring happening in the stables, provide welfare for the trainers, provide education for the trainers, and help bring them up to the standard that they want the industry to achieve.
Now, that's pretty strong comment from Cindy Olsen. She's not prone to flying off the handle and making outlandish comments. And look, I feel for Racing Victoria in one sense, because this week off was born out of good intentions and goodwill to try and help the participants. But Paul, it seems to me that there is a disconnect. And why is there a disconnect?
I think I read your piece yesterday over lunch with my wife and had a nice little chuckle. It was good. It was hard. The communication aspect at the moment, it's been raised with me over significant other issues as well. Now, it's definitely raised with the week off stuff. There was a lot of trainers and associations frustrated by what they saw as a lack of communication with key participants. But it's also going to other issues as well. There's some frustration around the All-Star Mile and how that was sold and the communications back. And even I wrote a piece today in the racing.com website about the communication around the cup changes. Why are trainers overseas still confused? And have we as an industry done enough to sell these changes to the wider public to say, hey, racing, whether you like the changes or not, it is a safer race this year. So you do have that communications issue as well. And, you know, I think you made the point on air last week, they should be in the same room talking. You know, RV are clearly very frustrated with the blowback around the race 3 week. They feel like they consulted, they feel like they listened, and they got a punch in the way through for doing what, you know, the jockeys were really supportive of, other groups are really supportive of. So I think communication is a big issue, which I think it's definitely the feedback that's been given to RV, is my understanding.
And I don't think the trainers are right on everything as well, but I think if you talk to people, Sharky, and you try to explain things, maybe you can say, well, hang on, this is why we did it this way, and no, that's why that won't work. And people can may not agree with you, but they feel at least satisfied that they've had a hearing.
We hear a lot from trainers around how their horses are going to run. Are you going to win on Saturday? Is this thing ready? Is it all punt-related as everything else is, and all result-focused? What last week did do, and what that forum did do, and some articles that were on racing.com as well, and through print media, it gave trainers a chance to bring to the table some of the issues that they feel are really impacting their community and their demographic within the racing industry. And I thought that was a real positive out of last week, that they had the time to come in, three trainers from different generations, different sort of business profiles, and put forward what they saw as issues, and everything from the benchmark system to racing academies and weeks off and everything else. Like, that, I hope, is the start of really good consultation around other things other than just, oh, do we need a week off? Do we have a day off? Do we have Sundays off? Whatever it is. There were some bigger issues raised that Racing Victoria should have taken note of and said, we need to follow this up.
And three pretty smart judges as well. We're not talking about the clickbait types. Not there's that many in racing, but three people that usually when they speak up, and Cindy being one of them, you sit back and take note.
And the good thing was they didn't all agree. Were points that David made and Mick jumped in and said, nah, you know what, I don't agree with that, I can't accept that. And, you know, there's somebody with a lot more experience who's been around a lot longer, but David's looking at it with different eyes. Now, they didn't agree between themselves, but maybe David, from where he is in his training career, he's identifying things as issues. So there's a whole... it's a much bigger conversation than just Racing Victoria and saying we need to communicate better. I think there's a lot more guts to this.
Absolutely. There's a few of those issues I'm going to play in a moment, but we've got Brian from Brayside wants to have his say on the week off. How are you, Brian?
Very well. Hope you're well too. Just got a way to get around and have a day off and a week off. Suggest that Victoria's zoned off into seven zones, which may overlap. So every Sunday you would race in the Western Districts. So jumping trainers know Sundays we're racing. You go to Monday, it could be the Riverland, which would be a Chuka Mildura, those places. So if somebody from Gippsland wants to run a jumper, they can run on Sunday, then maybe something on Monday on the way back. So a lot of battling trainers need these little races for their maidens and so on. You run trials after the last, so rather than someone going to the races Sunday and trialing Monday, they could race and trial on Sunday. And then everywhere through the state, people would know where their horses are likely to race and not race, so they can program a day off all year. And to get a week off, I'd suggest that in winter, there's either 1 week or 2 weeks of racing in the Riverland, so you get good tracks, good weather. People can take a load of horses up. Something that's weathered in the winter than Queensland. Can come to join the stable in Echuca or Mildura, get another week or two with the trainer supervising its preparation, and then they can come back. So you don't get a week or two off, but you get a week or two in the warmer weather. And then if people don't like that, they can have a week or two off.
Well, Brian, appreciate your call and your thoughts. There's a lot of different ideas and opinions about how we split racing up, what we do to try and help the participants out.
It's just... yeah, and proof that there are other people thinking about this. Punters are thinking about this now. Brian's put some thought into that and come up with a concept that he thought would work. And I'm sure there are other people out there doing the same.
Dave Eustace made a good point about start times. Said we need to start at 5 o'clock. And we need to do that for the current industry, the welfare of participants, and also to recruit new people in. But he also said we should have a training school.
I think we need a racing school. The PHA, like, there's zero money in England. Zero. We race for ribbons, and they have a racing school, which is funded by the sport. So from that, you know, there's plenty of money here. We must be able to make it more efficient, whether it's money that comes from horse welfare, which is an awful lot, to build a racing school. And I think you could build a racing school on a racetrack and have a trial track and a racing school.
I love the idea of a training centre, and it's been discussed a lot of times. Paul, do you think it could become a reality?
I actually do. Now, I believe that if... I don't want to mention the S word on here and Sandown, but if Sandown is sold, and it is industry money, that those profits, I believe there's a real chance that these kind of training facilities and new age stuff is a complete reality.
Why not put it at Sandown? Couldn't that be an income stream for Melbourne Racing Club to have some sort of school or an education department there? And not just... this is the thing that was spoken about the other day, and it followed on from our last Monday with Maddie and talking about trainers and what it takes to become a trainer. Racing school people immediately think stable staff, jockeys, that sort of thing. What about trainers? What about their ongoing education and what they need to do to make sure their business is growing the right way? You know, who's helping them? Who's mentoring the new trainer that comes in, ticks all the boxes with, yeah, I've done all this experience, here's my business plan, whatever. And they're never assessed again.
Mm.
You know, that those business plans, those things that help people be successful, you know, they're not followed up on. There's a lot of different areas that a racing school, a racing academy, university, whatever you want to call it, could address. I think great idea.
Dave's idea was, let's put it at Seymour, which is, you know, cost a lot of money to refurb, redo the track. He said we could have a dedicated trial track and training centre at Seymour.
Well, you're right in the heart of breeding industry as well. With all the studs and everything around there, Chatswood's up for sale. Turn that into a national stud of sorts. So you're educating the stud staff of tomorrow in a real life working stud example. Yeah, there's lots of good ideas.
Last little issue I want to play from that forum, because I thought this was really insightful on one of the most contentious issues in racing. And that was the use of the whip. This is what Mick Price and Dave Eustace had to say. Re the whip.
There probably needs to be an adjustment in the last 100 metres. I mean, it's an evolving thing. But to unleash the crop, or whatever you want to call it, in the last 100 metres with no limit is the part of the race that everyone is watching the most closest up. So not achieving enough by still allowing the last 100 metres unlimited.
Yeah, without doubt, there's got to be a limit to how many times you can use it in the 100, without doubt.
As a trainer, would that worry you? Do you get much more out of a horse in the last 100?
It's unsightly, but two, I actually don't think it helps the horse at all. I think it's unbalancing. You watch Mellum, Zara, Carr, McAvoy, they're the last to reach for it, and then five strides before the line, they put it down and they push. Because the horse is trying, you just got to keep it balanced.
I think that sums it up beautifully.
So true. You know, it's such a... if it's all about appearances and everything else with the whip, then why is the last 100 this? Like the whip's just out, right? It's crazy. It makes no sense. I don't know why it's gone this long without being addressed. I don't know why it still exists.
Well,
the
whip report from Racing Australia is still sitting on the table of Miles Forman.
Who?
Miles Forman, the Racing Australia. Racing Australia CEO. That whip report was done how long ago? It's been sitting there, haven't met in, was it 9 months now? I tell you, it's one of the biggest, disgrace is a big word, but it's becoming almost an ongoing joke now.
Is there any word when they are going to meet, Paul?
No, I Miles didn't return my calls and my text messages recently on the issue, Michael, but I believe that there is definitely some progress in setting that new meeting, but what are the chances of New South Wales making any changes in this space? I reckon it's zero. I reckon that we're going to be having the same debate this time in 12 months.
And the issue is, can you have different whip rules in different states?
No, well, we've already got different medications.
That's
rules,
right.
And things like that. Like, it's fractured enough.
I believe last year that there was almost legal letters sent from New South Wales to Victoria for Victoria daring to have a limited series without a whip. So if we've got legal lawyers involved, what chance do we have of having any kind of...
But when you've got the smartest minds in the game agreeing that the whip doesn't do anything in the last 100 metres, it actually hinders horses. The better riders don't even use it. Limit the number of strikes. Don't bar it altogether. Limit the number of strikes in the last 100.
But
don't you need to... Doesn't Racing New South Wales, doesn't Racing Australia need to listen to that?
And we'll change the Melbourne Cup. our most famous race to make sure that the optics of racing is safer.
Talk about appearances in the Melbourne Cup.
Appearances, you've got a whip being used still unfettered in the last...
Look, it doesn't make sense. When we cover the Melbourne Cup on Channel 10, the most beautiful pictures that we see in any sport are the super slow-mo. Mm. And even when I, when you're on air and you look that back, I've almost winced a little bit with that super slow-mo because you can see the whip bending back, bending forward, and it exacerbates it so much. And
you think, the sound of it as well. If you've had a big day, you know, when I take my friends who aren't racing people, the sound. One thing I do agree with New South Wales' stance is calling it a crop.
Yeah, you know, the optics Nick was around, strong on that,
yeah,
Nick Price.
It's a big, I reckon that's one part of the discussion we need to. I know it's semantics, but, you know, everything matters when it comes to these kind of optics.
Well, look, it was fascinating, and once again, appreciate the time that all the trainers gave us. Hopefully something comes out of it, and there is an opening up of dialogue between the trainers. There's a few SMSs here. I'll get to them in a moment. One of them, though, says, well, maybe RV would listen to the trainers if they stopped whinging so much. Look, there are some that just like to whinge for the sake of having a whinge, but I think the three that we had in the studio and a lot of others are pretty sensible when it comes to giving their feedback as well. I wonder what Terry Henderson thinks about the forum we had last week and some of those issues. He's been online having a listen as well. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Michael.
What's your thoughts, just lastly, on the whip? The trainer's saying that we should not have unfettered whip use in the last 100 metres, and it doesn't actually help the horse.
Well, I'm not a rider, so it's I don't want to make a naive comment, but I can do comparisons with French racing. We did a study about 12 months ago in the office. We use a whip generally three times more often than they do in France, and even against England, we're about 40% up on English racing. And when you go to the classic races, the gap is even wider. So you would think that if you take, you know, these international top races like the Arc or the Derby and those sort of races, and they don't use the whip nearly as much as we do in our bigger races, there's a really strong argument for a reduction in the use of it. And as for the last 100 metres, well, you look at Jamie Carr's ride on Thunderstruck on Saturday. She didn't touch the horse with the whip for the last 200 metres, mate. Some might say that it's just trying to keep the horse straight. So she's busy doing other things. But the reality is it doesn't appear as though the last 100 metres makes a hell of a lot of difference.
Terry, we'll talk about On Thunderstruck in a moment, but disappointing news coming through this morning that True Self has gone amiss and we won't see her out here in the spring.
No, we won't. It looks as though she's got a suspensory issue, unfortunately, Michael. Really disappointed for us and our owners, but she certainly won't be. She's on her way to America next week, actually, and then she was going to come to Australia after that, and she won't be coming now. And there must be a question mark about her future as a racehorse as well, because she is, she's 8 European time, so she's getting close to that time.
I was going to ask that, Terry, does that sort of all but spell the end of her career? And if so, where does she continue her breeding career? With a mare like that, she's obviously potentially able to inject great class and strength and stamina into an Australian breeding demographic if she was to come here and be served?
It's a good point, Mick. In fact, in many ways, she's probably a more valuable mare over here than over there. She's not overly well-bred. She was originally destined to be a jumper. But Oscar was a good flat horse himself. So, you know, with her profile in Australia, she could well be a more commercial mare in Australia than Europe. But there are others in the breeding game that know more about this than me, and obviously we'll talk to them as we go forward if she does retire from racing.
Terry, obviously OTI is going to play a key part in this year's international contingent around obviously some of those big key races, the Melbourne Cup. Firstly, how is your contingent looking, and what are you expecting in these announcements around nominations tomorrow? How many international runners do you think are going to be there?
Look, I'm only guessing. Because it's so early this year, Paul, with the close, you're in a situation where if you're in doubt, you've got to put them in. So our numbers locally are very high, much higher than normal, because some of these horses really are just starting their campaigns and you don't really know whether they're going to, you know, go through the campaigns well or not. So you've got to put them in. As for overseas horses, I haven't had much feedback at all, but I would expect there to be 4 or 5 or 6 horses nominated. We'll only have one. The horse that won for us at Goodwood last week, we won't bring out. He'll stay on for the St. Ledger. So we'll only have one, but I know of two or three others that are likely to come across as well. So I think there'd probably 8 or 10 nominated, and I'd say we'll be lucky if we get more than 4 or 5.
All right. So the feedback in more recent times is that it is too onerous what's been put in place for the Spring Carnival. Where do you stand on it, Terry?
Well, I stand on the fact that we had to do things to make the race a safer race. And I think that by and large, the intention of Racing Victoria has been the right intention. I think there are a couple of aspects of the new rules that border on being naive, especially those that prohibit a horse coming across that may have had a screw inserted in a bone or a fetlock or a joint at some stage, because we all know that horses that often have that procedure go on to race for a long time afterwards. So from that point of view, I think some of them are a bit over the top, but the general approach, I think, has been sound. And, you know, the Melbourne Cup for Europeans isn't the be-all and end-all. They're flat out with these great races in England, France and Ireland at the moment, and there are a lot of good races in America. There's the Breeders' Cup over there. So, you know, this is a race for what you would call their B-grade handicapping types. It's not for their A-graders over there. And as a result of that, given the work that's got to be done to get these horses to the race, you know, it's you know, not front-of-mind stuff. And if it's too hard, they don't bother.
Terry, in your view, is it the race itself, that the Melbourne Cup, the 3,200 metres, is that the problem? Is that the element of danger, the actual race? Or is it the what's asked of these horses in the lead-up? Is it the preparation? Is it where they're prepared? Is it Werribee? Is it the remodelling that we hear about from the veterinary fraternity? Where did you see the problem lying?
Well, I don't see it being Werribee per se, which is often come up as the issue. I think you've got a situation where horses are coming off tracks in Europe that by and large have a bit of give in them, but the horses can get their toe in, especially if they start in the Caulfield Cup, which is generally a firm track race, and then back up in the Melbourne Cup. Quite often we don't see the stresses that come out of the Caulfield Cup on the firmer track until they actually come out and race in the Melbourne Cup. So, you know, it's a big change for these horses to go from one surface to another and then to back up on firm surfaces twice in a row when the original run for those horses in Australia may have been a taxing run. I'm not only saying it's Caulfield, but it can even be Geelong, because Geelong can, you know, be on the firmer side compared to the European track. And I think if you look at the horses that have gone on through a couple of races over here, and I know there's a few that have just started the Melbourne Cup alone. But, you know, you just wonder sometimes whether that's the compounding effect of two races that's brought on the problem. And I think to that extent, the new rules have tried to mitigate that issue by having certain restrictions on the number of races a horse can be in when it comes out to Australia. Hey, but Terry, I don't think there's any one particular issue.
Terry, just a quick one on what was a brilliant win by I'm Thunderstruck on Saturday. Golden Eagle, is that what seems to be the target? Will we get to see him through the early part of the spring before he heads to Sydney?
Mick and Michael haven't decided on the actual program yet. They'll do that over the next couple of weeks while the horse is having a short break. But whether he has one run in Melbourne and then goes up to Sydney for two runs, certainly you'd have a run up there before the Golden Eagle. But I would imagine he'll have two runs, probably one in Melbourne, one in Sydney, and then go into the Golden Eagle if everything goes well, Michael.
Now, Terry, I believe there were some offers from Hong Kong for I'm Thunderstruck. Now, do you expect those offers to come again after Saturday? And how we go? How good would those offers have to be for you'd think owners to say yes?
I don't know the answer to the second part, because we go to our owners with the offers and see what they think. But put it this way, there have been attractive offers received and attractive offers rejected.
All right. Well, you're sitting pretty anyway. You've got a good team. Despite the unfortunate news with True Self this morning, it was a good weekend for OTI. Appreciate your time this morning, Terry.
Yeah, well done, Michael. That article you wrote yesterday was very good and right on the mark, I thought. And I thought it's a very relevant one in the way the communication takes place in the game at the moment.
Thank you, Terry. Good luck with the noms tomorrow. We'll have more on that coming up. Terry Henderson from OTI. And just actually speaking of internationals, on .com, there's an article which has just gone up, which is from the Racing Post, saying that Newmarket trainer Ismail Mohammed plans to bring out Away He Goes, who ran second in the Goodwood Cup, to Melbourne. So what level would you rate that horse, Sharky?
I think there was a little bit of a surprise that he ran so well last week.
Yep.
Mm.
All right.
I'm not getting too
You're not getting
away.
Enthusiastic about
no.
that as yet.
No, he's no... Well, yes, exactly.
Shark wants 18 in the Melbourne Cup from...
Send them all.
...overseas.
Can I... I'm going to go back a step, guys. I know I'm going a bit off to here. Got a text just then. 2009 in Victoria. Craig Williams and... Oliver both shared the Victorian Premiership after coming equal.
There you go.
So if Jess Eaton and Todd Pannell were in Victoria and that happened, they both would have got the honours.
What are you doing over there, Adelaide? Sort it out.
They're always a few years behind us.
Oh, you be careful. They're on. they've been going well, Adelaide.
No,
but I would like to see that. I would like to see someone come out there with that. There is a couple of texts that have come through and said, well, hang on, we give 3-2-1 in the Brownlow, and that's what the Brownlow has decided on. It's a little bit different, though. It's not a best ride of the day voting system. It's actually winning the races as well.
That's what the Scobie is, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly right. What have we got? SMSs here. Are there tutors working in the racing industry for trainers and jockeys that can help upskill and continue people's learning?
Well, James, from Brian. James Winks has seen a niche there for jockeys, hasn't he? And he's sort of filling that void a little bit. But I assume some of them have mentors that they talk to, but I don't know if there's any industry provided or you know, even professionals that generally target the racing
That's
industry.
The apprentice.
It's not something I've heard of.
No, I haven't heard of that either.
There's a couple of SMSs here. Hey, I normally give Matty Stewart a clip, but he's on the money. Well done, Ree. His stance on the whip. Do you think we will see some change there or not? Is it too difficult?
I don't know if it's too difficult. It just needs to happen. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. If we're worried about how racing looks with the whip, why would you have it just away you go the last 100 metres when everyone's watching? It just seems dumb.
SMS saying, why don't we put the training centre out at Cranbourne? Can we fit any more out at Cranbourne?
I don't know. There's much room out there. I know Neil Bainbridge is looking forward to having some of the big trainers down there, but yeah, they're running out of space.
Bustling.
Hey, Sharky, you've got some breaking news from Leneva Park as well.
A little bit extra. I just got a text from one of the guys saying, I'm Thunderstruck's actually on the way to the farm today, so I'll give him a pat tomorrow when I'm up there for his little freshen up. But no, we've bought Acer, gratefully, from Shadwell to continue on and hopefully become a stallion prospect. So yeah, he's a very talented horse, and he was due to go to Hong Kong, but that fell through, and we quickly snapped him up.
And he's staying with Team Hayes?
Staying with Ben and JD, yes.
All right, so where's he going to be heading to?
He'll kick off this Saturday in the Ori Star. So Jamie Carr... pretty sure he's riding. She's had him in two jump outs and is like what she's felt, so we thought we'll get in early and grab the best we can. Last prep he was probably a little bit keen, a little bit fresh in his races, so Jamie's got such a way with horses to help them settle, and it looks like so far she's working her magic with Acer.
One nominations will come in a little later, Paul, but the Ori Star, we remember traditionally, used to be where Bart Cummings would kick off his Melbourne Cup. El Segundo kicked off there as well. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of lineup we have in the Ori Star on Saturday.
It's really got that spring feel to it now, doesn't it? I reckon a couple of weeks ago when Streets of Avalon came back, some of the good horses are starting to come back again. It's got that, even look out the window now and the sun's out, you get that feel that the fields are starting to get good. We're starting to talk about some of those really good horses.
Horses are back. Snapper will be on soon. It will all be happening.
I like this SMS. Trainers don't whinge as much as you journalists. nice little clip there. And speaking of the sun, I can't find the SMS, but there was a little SMS saying, hello, boys. We're sitting up in Darwin listening to the show today, enjoying the warm weather because it is Darwin Cup Day today, Sharky. Now, on Friday, I did give you a little bit of homework.
Yes.
On Friday, Form Focus, to say, come prepared with the winner of the Great Northern Darwin Cup. And we will try and find you the winner after 10 o'clock as well, because Dan Nuttall from Best Bets will be giving us the quaddie and the selections for Darwin today. But we can't be there in person. We need to be there in spirit and back the winner. Who wins the Darwin Cup, Sharky?
There are some handy horses in the like Chaonix going around and is 34-1.
Dan and Roman.
Dan and Roman, a horse I know well, is up there. If he found his best, he could just about
Casino
win.
Casino 17.
Reserve Street. No, it's a handy Heavenly race. Emperor. They find their way up there, don't they? I would, you know what? I'm going to have something on Dan and Roman because I know the horse very well. But I thought Heavenly Emperor was good in the lead-up race, running fourth, third up, should be ready to rock
Stephen,
and roll.
Stephen Brown knows.
And can go forward. I think if you can go forward in a Darwin Cup, you are right in the race.
You'll be watching the Darwin Cup today, Paul. It's 6 o'clock tonight for those who want to tune in and watch the Darwin Cup. Have you done the form? Do you like anything?
I haven't done the form in Darwin, I must say, but the idea of being up there in some heat out of Victoria does sound... I'd go watch the Baghdad Cup to go get some heat and... get out of Victoria at the moment. So,
Well, I said last year, 12 months ago on this same show, we'll be in Darwin next year for the Darwin Cup. Unfortunately, we can't be because of COVID once again. But
there's no way Matty Stewart would have had a week off if he was going.
Is he in Darwin?
No, his budget doesn't extend to Darwin. I think Wye River maybe might be where he is, or down the coast somewhere. Right. We might be able to have some social media sightings of Matty Stewart while he's trying to catch a fish.
This is something unpleasant, but I won't say that.
No. Hey, Paul, great fun, great debut on The Verdict. Good to have you in here from .com.
Thanks for having me.
And we look forward to your article today on the internationals and the noms. Interesting reading as well, and all will be revealed tomorrow.
Big day tomorrow. I think you're hosting the event.
Absolutely. Should be good fun. Hopefully, we do get a fair few noms.
A friend's just texted me and said, don't worry about the internationals. Race 6 at Darwin today. Prince of Arran's running.
Is it?
Hang on. Yeah, it is.
Is it really? There you
so
go.
So there you go. If you're missing out on the internationals, you can back Prince of Arran in the 6th at Darwin.
There we go. How good is that? Prince of Arran, race 6. A lazy $81 for the Omen punters out there. Good on you, Sharky. Have a good week.
See you later in the week.
All right. That was The Verdict. Don't go anywhere, though. We've got winners at Echuca today and also the Darwin Cup.